But what that did for education was we were all forced to go, we can't access our resources anymore. Our kids can't access any of the stuff that they used to have, and we can't access all our banks of resources and stuff. So kind of have to find another way to do it, because the kids were all sitting the same exam at the end of the year as everyone else in the country that hadn't had an earthquake. So there's this real kind of, what's the word, kind of a hothouse of education, digital technology thinking stuff happening in Christchurch.
Listening to the NZ PE Teacher Cast, a podcast sharing some of the inspirational stories from amazing teachers and educators within New Zealand and around the world. Today's episode is sponsored by My Study Series, an online learning platform supporting Kiwi teachers and students through NCEA. With the ability to track student progress and quiz results, data provided by My Study Series ensures teachers remain informed of how well their students are performing. Check it out now at mystudyseries.co.nz.
Kia ora everyone, and welcome to episode number 21 of the NZPE Teacher Cast. Today we welcome onto the podcast Stephen McConaughey from Middleton Grange School, who is a very talented maths teacher doing amazing things with technology and e-learning in this space. He shares some fascinating stories from how the Canterbury earthquakes impacted on the use and uptake of technology and mathematics, through to his more recent experiences building content for My Study Series. Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, great to be here.
How's your day been?
Pretty intense. Long day, started with some training before school, PD training, not physical training.
Wait, no physical training?
No, I'm afraid not. No, I'd rather do some maths.
So before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about your teaching background and experience and a few tidbits about your school and the students you teach?
Yeah, so I started teaching at Linwood College in Christchurch, and that was in 2008. They're Curried High School. Any maths educators listening might know the name Alan Paris. He was my first HOD, so it was great to start training under him. He's pretty much famous. And then the year of the earthquake was my last year there. Moved to Middleton Grange School, which is where I am now. So it's the start of 2012. Middleton's a co-ed school, 1,400-ish students, years 1 to 13. So, yeah, I've just been teaching maths since then, years 9 to 13. And calculus and scholarship calc, my babies. So, been enjoying that.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of Middleton Grange until I had met Andrew O'Neill at a Penns conference.
And oh right, yeah.
He's been on the podcast, and I think it still is the most popular episode that we've had with all the stuff he's doing around sport and education. So
yeah, Andrew's fantastic. I really enjoy working with him. Don't tell him I said that. He'd get a big head, but I really like him.
No, I think you'll be listening. The earthquake, what impact did that have on education?
Oh, mate, that was huge for Christchurch. We, my school in particular, I was at Linwood College at the time, and that was one of the five schools that completely closed down. So we were shut for probably about 6 months. Our site was closed for 6 months, and as a school, we were shut for about 6 or 7 weeks, and like teaching out of McDonald's and the town library. And then after about 4 weeks of teaching in the town library, we found out the town library was red stickered as well, and that was unsafe and had been the whole time, so we moved out of there again. But once we started up, we moved to Cashmere High School, and their maths department really looked after us. It was really good. But they started at some crazy hour in the morning and finished at 12:30. They got like 1,700 kids out one gate, and we got our 1,000 kids in the other gate in 20 minutes flat. So they finished at about, I think, 12:35, and we started at 12:55 or something on the same site with the same buildings and the same offices. So it was pretty crazy, yeah. But what that did for education was we were all forced to go, we can't access our resources anymore. Our kids can't access any of the stuff that they used to have, and we can't access all our banks of resources and stuff, so kind of have to find another way to do it, because the kids were all sitting the same exam at the end of the year as everyone else in the country that hadn't had an earthquake. So there's this real kind of what's the word, kind of a hothouse of education, digital technology thinking stuff happening in Christchurch, and lots of networking, lots of learning around the stuff, lots of experimenting, just kind of because we had to. But then once the urgency died down, we just kept going, and it's been really cool. I feel like I'm kind of part of this huge experiment, but it's great. Learned lots.
So that was kind of born out of that need to come together and support one another, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And online learning suddenly became a thing that real physical flesh and blood schools had to deal with. Yeah. Rather than just being this concept of the future, it was like, oh, we kind of need this.
Mm. So you're also vice president of the Canterbury Mathematical Association. So that sounds very official and professional. What does that role entail for you?
It's triple the pay of the voluntary roles elsewhere on the committee, so that's pretty good. Unfortunately, triple nothing's still not that much, but it just means sitting
Math
on
jokes.
The yeah, woo, sitting on the executive committee. So we just kind of coordinate the PD and all the different programs that we offer to support maths teachers and maths students around Canterbury, you know, competitions for students and resources and PD training days for teachers and stuff. My particular thing is e-learning PD, so I organise an annual PD day for teachers. We started a few years ago with secondary maths. This year we had our first primary one, which was really exciting. So, yeah.
In terms of primary school, what challenges is there in arranging professional learning for them?
Well, the biggest challenge for me is that I'm not primary. So it's been with the first one we ran was this year, and I made sure that it was I was not the only secondary voice organizing it, but we certainly didn't have many, and that was on purpose. Just wanted to make sure that primary PD was organized by primary teachers. So yeah, it was me coming in with the e-learning stuff I'd done, but and the, you know, the experience of putting these PD things together, but then stepping right back and going, okay, well, you guys know what you need, so if we kind of give you the space for it, you guys organize the PD that you feel will be most valuable. And the feedback is really positive along those lines. So that was, yeah, the biggest challenge was just making sure that it was relevant to them when I'm not them, if that makes sense.
Do they not get a lot of PD?
I don't really know. There's just reasons for that. the PD funding models just changed nationwide last year, and that's left many primary schools in the lurch a little bit. There used to be kind of region-wide training symposiums and so on that were really popular with primary teachers that just don't happen anymore. And the PD funding model is very different. So getting subject-specific PD in front of teachers who want it or who are interested, my understanding is that that's gotten harder. But again, yeah, it's not really my area. What I was concerned about was that the CMA, the Canterbury Maths Association, were not really catering to primary maths teachers. So we exist to help maths educators, both primary and secondary. And I just wanted to really make sure that they were getting the support they needed from us as well.
Yeah, I know very little about the primary sector, and I think I really need to try to find a confident primary teacher to get on the podcast so I can learn a little bit more, because just knowing nothing, we see these kids come from primary into intermediate, and then we take over at secondary. It would be really good to at least have some sort of baseline knowledge of what that student has gone through, and at the moment I don't know, right. And I think that's I don't think that's ideal. We should know the processes that they go through if we want to scaffold and build on what they've learned.
So I've got a few names I can send your way, but I mean, I certainly felt that when I was going from a high school and end of 2011, start of 2012, I went from a high school to a school which we're in right from year 1 to 13, and I thought, man, this is going to be such an epic opportunity. I'm going to spend all this time with primary teachers, and we're going to network and connect and learn from each other, and I'm going to see what they're doing, and I'm going to improve my practice because of it. I mean, the reality is we're still teachers, and we still just don't have time. So, you know, we share a staff room, but we don't have the same break times, and you just don't have time to do all the things that you want to do. So just like everything else in education, I guess, we have these big ideas and big plans, but yeah.
So you're obviously passionate about e-learning strategies and the implementation of digital learning techniques. How has this technology impacted on the maths curriculum in recent times?
Man, the last decade's been pretty huge for digital learning in maths. I mean, it's been pretty huge for digital learning everywhere just because digital has become a thing, I guess. But there's in maths specifically, I think there's this really unique journey that we've been on. There were a few online products that I'm thinking kind of 8 to 10 years ago. There were a few online products that allowed students to practice maths in a more fun and more engaging way than they were with worksheets and textbooks and stuff. But that was pretty much it. It was just practice, but more colourful and not on an applet or online. But I just kept thinking there must be more to it. And there were plenty of people thinking that. So all the other curriculum areas get really collaborative and constructive, rich, kind of deeper thinking activities. But we just had this one particular type of digital learning tool. It was really good for basic drilling, but not really much beyond that. But then more recently, with things like free software like Desmos and GeoGebra to explore concepts, and then free stats analysis tools like NZ Grapher and Insight, they allowed students to really kind of play with data and explore patterns. So for math specifically, it's software that lowers the entry barrier. It's, you know, the shallower learning curve. So it takes the grunt work out of exploring patterns. And if I give a kid a worksheet with 20 questions on it so that they can try and see a pattern of what's happening when they change one particular part of an equation, I mean, it's a lot of work just to try and notice a pattern. But having all these really cool tools to for students to play around is really cool. So that's where we are now after that kind of decade of exploring what will this mean for maths. It's a super exciting place to be now.
Yeah, when I think about it, and I think about how technology has changed physical education, because it has, and probably in a similar time frame, but we're still limited in what that technology can do for us in a sense. But when I think about maths, I just think that the possibility with maths to bring in technology, I just think it's really well suited, and you can it allows you to I imagine to be able to do a lot and change the way that you deliver learning through that subject. Would that be correct?
Yeah, I think it can. I guess the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. So we kind of look out and go, oh man, like humanities and English, it must be so great to be in those areas for digital technology because, you know, you can have collaborative writing activities and build your own videos as like a, you know, I've seen teachers, English teachers, getting students to make movie trailers to show their understanding of themes and characters in a story. They just kind of lend themselves more to digital stuff than maths. So I guess, yeah, grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. But certainly now that I've seen how it can all happen, it's super exciting.
What do you think the biggest challenges facing maths teachers with regards to technology and its role in your learning area?
I guess that biggest challenge is what I was saying, that it's very easy to do drilling and tick that e-learning box just by doing the drilling. You know, get all the kids sitting in a room with their headphones on, answering question after question after question of really low-level closed stuff. But getting beyond that is a pretty big shift. So that's a pretty big challenge. I mean, getting the teacher training, access to the technology for those little but crucial moments in a lesson where if you've got to book a computer lab for your lesson, it's not quite the same as, oh, actually, I think this might be happening in this particular concept. Maybe we'll just try that and just have a play with that. Grab advice. It's jumping. The biggest challenge, I think, is jumping from the drilling stuff, the just the practice, to that higher level thinking, which is a little less obvious on how to do it.
So does that still occur a little bit, you know, the constant drilling and rote learning, does that still happen in quite a few classrooms?
I mean, there's plenty of really, really inspiring maths teachers who are pushing the envelope with this stuff. And look, I mean, the whole kind of Jo Bowler movement, Jo Bowler's an educator from, I think, the UK. She's fantastic. She's got wide following in the maths community of people really looking at, well, how do we get students thinking creatively and meaningfully about maths concepts and understanding them more deeply rather than just practicing. So practice is important, but
yeah,
but really, yeah, moving beyond that. But in saying that, yeah, short answer, yes, there's still a lot of just practice happening in classrooms, some classrooms. So yeah, it's getting that right balance.
Yeah, we see it too in PE, and it's getting better, but it's in our learning area, it's so easy to just play games, and if those games serve a bigger purpose, that's really cool. But it's about understanding, you know, it's been able to understand the issues that we see in society, some of those sociocultural issues, and get students building knowledge and critical thinking around some of those issues. And that's been that's kind of the transition from our curriculum over the last 10 years. But it's the same thing, that some teachers don't do that well and aren't trying to do that well. So yeah, going back to that, you talked about all that professional learning that needs to happen to take place to upskill those teachers and get them to see the value in doing additional stuff.
And even getting it into the hands of the teachers who do want to, but you know, it's just one of a thousand pressures on them at the moment. So yeah, just kind of lowering those barriers for teachers as well.
You're also a keen flipped educator, which I love, and you've been using it within your teaching this year. How have you found that?
I've been loving it. I've really enjoyed it. I've learned a lot. I'm not there yet. I've been wanting to try it for ages, but I've just started it this year. So it's pretty cool. The students learn the skills before they come into class. It gives me more time to play and explore and investigate and practice in class, or even just more tutorial time some lessons. So I just have more time to get around everyone while they do that practice. Maths qualifications in New Zealand, they're explicitly based on the Solo taxonomy. So for any listeners that are familiar with that lingo, the videos, I use that for the multi-structural thinking before the class, and then students come into class for the lesson to lock that in and to really get into the relational thinking and extended abstract thinking. What I found in my class, students who were previously sitting on Achieved are now discussing concepts at a really high level. And I shouldn't say surprising me, because you know, we all have high expectations of our students, but it has been really cool to see some of those students who were kind of floundering a little bit even a few weeks ago. I just started flipping an entire calculus topic recently, and you're really, really getting into it. So that's been really cool. But I look forward to seeing those final results in November, of course, but the formative assessment results have been really positive. So some students are liking it, some not so much, but I'm pretty sure that was true of how I used to teach anyway, so...
Those students who aren't liking it so much, what are their concerns with it?
Some of them don't like the fact that, from my point of view as a cynical teacher, they don't like that they can't get away with not doing regular homework anymore. So if they used to do a big chunk of homework every now and then, that doesn't fly when you're saying watch this video and do this this kind of reflection summary sheet before tomorrow's lesson. I mean, they've just got to do a little bit often. So some aren't so keen on that. Some are just finding that it's quite different from what they're used to. They're used to getting hard, concrete notes on paper, learning that, and then, like, it's quite a linear progression that certainly appeals to me. I know it doesn't appeal to everyone, but, I mean, I remember sitting in class like that, and that I really enjoyed that method of learning of, you know where everything's at, you know what's expected of you, here's the notes, here's the process, here's the concept, here's the skill, practice the skill, move on to the next one. It's quite nice and tidy, and it kind of fits together. So some students are kind of grieving for that. I mean, we're still doing that, but it's just unpacking it in a different way and it means that the digging in deeper is a lot more meaningful, but it's definitely a transition. So, and I've got to listen to the student voice as well, and I've done a couple of surveys with them, and I'm having lots of conversations with them. I'm talking to other teachers who are talking to those students so that I can kind of get that secondhand feedback that they may not say to me. Some of the ways that I can make it better or kind of ease that transition, or even not do some of the things that I thought were going really well, but haven't come across any major things yet.
Have you noticed that with that repurpose classroom time that you're getting a bit more face-to-face time with your students, have you noticed any impact on relationships there, any positive impacts? Has that been clear?
I've only been flipping for a short time, but it seems to be in terms of a bit more focused on those higher order thinking questions. So, only in the early days so far, it's starting to lean in that direction.
So you're really passionate about technology, and you're doing all of this flip learning, and you're experimenting with that. So obviously you feel that that's the way forward with mathematics education. Does that mean no more textbooks?
There's two parts to that question, I guess. There's no more practicing in a textbook, or no more lugging around the textbook. I remember having a real heavy bag, school bag, when I was a kid. So from a practice point of view, they say that 10,000 hours of deliberate practice makes you an expert in something. So if your students are just doing the conceptual discussions and exploring patterns, it's not going to help them to factorize brackets. If they need to factorize brackets, then they need to know how to factorize brackets. They need to be fluent in that skill. So not saying do 10,000 hours of factorizing brackets, but you know what I mean.
So
it's not just understanding those concepts, but being fluent in applying them. But I guess the other side of no more textbooks, having a physical textbook, probably not. I think we're probably moving away from that. They're big and heavy. Book publishers are starting to catch on, so they're starting to deliver digital versions of their publications. So chucking in like interactives and enhanced content. I'm not a big fan of going completely paperless. I still scribble on paper when I need to. It does seem logical with textbooks to stop carrying around this massive thing.
That paperless comment is an interesting one, and this is slightly unrelated, but I felt I was getting a bit too connected. So end of last year, I purchased an actual physical diary, diary / journal, and I was
old
using
school.
That. Yeah, but old school. And I do my morning and evening routines with that, and I use the planner. And I also bought this notebook, which was quite flashy. It's called a Rocket Book, and essentially it's an erasable notebook that then you can scan, and you can send it to Dropbox or Google Drive or email it or whatever. And so I was really getting into the paper stuff, and then so that's been 6 or 7 months, and then now I've found I've gone away from them again. I haven't worked it out yet, but I've moved. I'm using Trello a lot for my planning and my to-do lists, and I'm back on Google Calendar, and I need to sit back and think about why I made that change, because I was really enjoying doing the paper stuff. But it's really interesting how you chop and change.
Yeah.
And the benefits of paper or not having paper. And
I mean, I couldn't live without my Outlook calendar, but then in saying that, on my desk at work I've got a big paper handwritten list of my kind of big deadlines for the term, just because I just can't keep track of it otherwise. I use my Outlook tasks, so I've got tasks and deadlines and reminders coming out the wazoo, but it's having the paper list there, I couldn't live without it.
So I it's been a while since I've been in a maths lesson, and I've got some horrendous stories from my
probably
got
pretty
some good stories too. I've got some good stories.
Stories, bro.
I bet. Actually, one of my best memories of maths was was in primary school, when I was in some accelerated group, and the principal actually came and taught us twice a week, which was really cool. And that's kind of started my love for maths, but that has since faded into oblivion. So now, thinking about your classes or your teaching, what would an ideal mess lesson look to you?
Right. I guess it's largely shaped by the new flipped learning stuff that I've been exploring. So it would start with students learning that new content and all the vocab and stuff, seeing it before the lesson, either in a video or some other medium. Maybe the first few minutes of the lesson discussing that content and any questions they might have, clearing up any confusions, getting students to write some higher order thinking questions maybe before they come in based on the video, and then getting them to answer each other's questions when they come in can be quite cool, just for those first few minutes, and then getting into a really rich activity. So maybe like discussion of those higher order thinking questions in more detail, or some investigation of a concept with like GeoGebra and Desmos, the two bits of software I mentioned before, or maybe like a practical activity where they get up and they measure stuff and they analyze results and make predictions, stuff that we probably wouldn't have had time for before. But yeah, get into it a bit more and then wrap it all up at the end.
Nice. GeoGebra and those other, you mentioned another app, what are they for people that aren't in the mess?
Oh yeah, just kind of assume that everyone knows what you're talking about, eh? They're both they're alternatives of each other, with slightly different strengths. So I use both when the time's right, but they are graphing software to varying degrees. So GeoGebra being like overlapping with geometry and algebra, so you can do some cool things with equations and graphs and tables and showing all the links between them, and showing some angle rules on shapes and how that all plays together in a really visual way where the students are playing with stuff and creating stuff. It's really cool. Or Desmos is more on the graph side than the geometry side, but a lot of cool free resources there. They're both free software, so really useful for teachers and for students.
Nice. You've done some postgraduate study in education technology. Mm. Did you find that helpful?
Yeah, it was super helpful. It kind of gave me an opportunity to dig into those questions that I had around there must be more to it than this online drilling. And I just kept wondering, I see all this other stuff happening in the other learning areas that I was saying before, but what can we do in maths? How do we get to that kind of holy land, promised land? But research and networking that I wouldn't have access to otherwise was really good. It was really good. If anyone's considering it, definitely take the plunge.
I'd love to step up and do some postgrad stuff, but yeah, I just don't have time. Like what could, say, a teacher who wants to learn or pick up or do some of the stuff but don't have the time to do a full-blown postgrad course, how could they go about improving their skill set in this instance?
I guess get involved with your local subject association. So especially Canterbury Maths teachers, come along to our annual PD day for e-learning, or we have little bits throughout the year. So if you're in an area where you have a subject association that's offering stuff, get along to it, make it a priority. Facebook groups for teachers, really helpful. Twitter, get on there and follow people. Get to the NZAMT conference, so that's our National Maths Teachers Association. Lots of cool workshops happening. That's this year, next month, October. Or even go observe someone. So like outside your school even. So like there's a teacher from St. Andrew's College, Ben Hilliam. He's fantastic. I've learned a lot from him. He allowed me to drive over to his school and observe a flipped lesson with one of his senior maths classes recently. And it was really helpful. We caught up afterwards and I picked his brains. So go and watch people and pick people's brains. People are generally really willing to help.
So a lot of networking, right? And yeah, that's, you know, that's something I'm a fan of, is networking, which is really what this podcast has evolved into, and sharing people's stories, because I don't think we do it enough. But if you can just get out there and meet people and have a desire to learn from others, I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to ask questions. I mean, people like to be asked. It's, you know, it's kind of nice to know that your contribution is valued. So people like to be asked. And then when you ask, it's kind of nice to know that you made that connection and that, you know, that's something that you can build on in the future. So, and it goes both ways. They might have something that, that you can help with later on. So, don't be afraid to ask questions.
So last week we announced my study series for mathematics, which launches next year, and you've been subcontracted to create content for the platform, and you're doing a really good job, by the way.
Thanks, bro.
What do you think is the best benefit my study series has to offer for math teachers and students?
You mentioned before repurposing the classroom time. I think that's really the key. So instead of using that classroom time to teach content and then sending the kids away to do the hard stuff, you're using the videos in my study series to get that multi-structural thinking happening before the lesson starts. And that gives you more time in class for all the relational thinking and the extended abstract thinking. So repurposing the classroom time. My study series, it has all the videos for NCEA Maths. So to me, a huge advantage is that teachers who can't make their own videos or they don't want to make their own videos, they can try flipped learning without that huge burden of, you know, oh, I've got to create videos for every topic this year. With teachers who maybe are planning to make their own videos, they don't have to wait until they've got that whole back catalogue created. They can just start straight away with my study series and get started in the meantime, and then build up your own catalogue as they go. But yeah, I mean, I really like the quizzes and the student data. It gives you accountability for watching the videos. So, I mean, I've been using this with my own class in the last few weeks, and I can see who's watched each video. I can see what they got on the quiz, how many times they attempted the quiz. You know, kind of, are they getting these basic concepts before class starts?
Well, it was really born out of that flipped approach, which is something I've advocated for years. And, you know, now we're sort of 8 months into using it with, and we've got about 75 schools using it for PE. And the feedback we're getting is it is good, and the kids are enjoying using it, and the data is useful for the teachers, and it is allowing people to repurpose their classroom time, which is a big benefit along with those relationships. So I'm really excited to see the uptake in the maths community, and see some of the positive stories that come out of that. But I think I really do think what you're building and the content you're pushing out is good, and I think people recognise that. So keep up the good work.
Thanks, Matt.
To finish, if there was one small practical step a maths teacher could make tomorrow to take them in the right direction with all of the stuff that we've talked about, the technology and stuff like that, what would that be?
I think you hit the nail on the head with one small practical step. I think that's the key. Don't try too much at once. Just grab something small and something manageable. So for me, my something small and manageable, which, you know, might suit someone else as well, just a really small, simple kind of what do you notice type activity. So maybe like around a Desmos or a GeoGebra applet, because they're all free online. So get the students using the applet themselves, you know, dragging a slider or building a some kind of shape and showing angle rules maybe. So getting them to make a prediction or a conjecture and then testing that. And it might even just be a starter activity for 10 minutes or something simple where they're having a play with the applet and then writing some reflection on what they noticed and kind of what they thought it might be and what they tested. And then moving on from there and building on that without technology might be a really good way to kind of start this and dip your feet in.
Start small, I like it. Hey Stephen, I really want to just thank you for taking the time to have a chat. And I've gotten to know you over the last year or last few months, and I like your passion for mathematics, and for somebody like myself who is I would be the complete opposite to passionate for mathematics, it's been quite refreshing to kind of revisit that space of mathematics and tongue in cheek a little bit, but you know, I think when you have people who are passionate about their learning area or their topic or their subject, then the students can just feed off that in a really nice way, and that's what this is all about. It's about growing you know, actively involved lifelong learners, and you're obviously doing that. So keep up the good work, and I look forward to catching up with you again.
Cool. You too.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, bro.